Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to The Man's Voice here as we're sitting in this pandemic and everyone is doing different things in terms of states. I'm allowing, here we go. Okay, there we go. So I want to welcome you to The Man's Voice again. Like I said, we're here. The show, unless there's a technical issue, we're always here. But I want to say hello to, it looks like Darius, it looks like Ron, and it looks like Don, the three of the panel on. And remember, if you are listening and you would like to be part of the panel, there are many ways to get in. One is to dial us 646-668-6781, and if not, I'm sorry, 646-668-8740. And if you you can go into your computers, if you go to Facebook, you can go to Facebook, and there is a link on Facebook for us. I wanted to start the conversation about the. I want to tell our panel, guys, you probably don't know where our audience is. And let me give you some numbers here. 70% of our show is heard, our last show, let me put it this way. 70% of the show that we broadcasted last week was in the United States. 8% the United Kingdom, people in the United Kingdom was listening. 4.65% were in Australia were listening. 2.9% was in Canada, and 2.9% was in the Netherlands. We also had listeners in Indonesia, listeners in Cambodia, and listeners in India, and believe it or not, South Africa. So we're kind of international all over the place. We have listeners all over the place. So I just wanted the panel to know that, you know, that we actually listened all over the place. But I want to ask the guys, what are your thoughts on this, the lockdown, lifting the lockdowns? Because I do know, and when Bruce gets on, I want to talk about Michigan, because I know that they had a big clash. There are certain governors who are trying to take the lockdowns away, and there are some mayors who are protesting. So, Don, what are your feelings on these lockdowns? Do you think they should be lifted? What do you think?
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's a wonderful day just to be alive. And David, to answer your question, I think it's a little bit too early for me. They can lift the lockdown if they want, but it's a little bit too early for me. You know, we're in a situation where I've never seen anything in the world like this. We got people suffering from corona disease, dying from corona disease. We got people in line to get groceries, to get food in the richest country in the world, America. People lined up for miles to get food to eat for them and their family. And then we got people in an economical crunch, can't make money to feed their family in the richest country in the world. So, David, I'm blessed to be alive, and it's a little bit too early for me to subject my body to that disease for economical growth, when it disproportionately affects people like me, of color, that's a senior citizen, over 60. Nope. I may look like I'm crazy, but I'm not crazy.
Ron, what are your thoughts on this lockdown, lifting the lockdown? Because, you know, with this warmer weather and the debates and stuff, it seems that people are coming out. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, Don, you know, I can't agree with you more, my friend. I'm not over 60, and I'm not African-American. I'm not black, but I do have high blood pressure, and I'm definitely on the obese side. So for me, it's also very scary to go out into the world. If you look at what the scientists and what the data shows us, on April the 30th and May the 1st, okay, those 2 days were the deadliest days in the United States. There were more deaths from coronavirus on April 30th and May the 1st. I know that the deaths, you know, they come 3 or 4 weeks after the infection, so I know that there's some lag time there, but to me personally, and it's just too soon, especially in areas like where I live. I live in South Florida, and I don't even keep track of how many cases are in Florida now, because we're in the top 10. We're not in the top 5, but top 10, you know, and over 50 or over 60% of the cases in all of Florida are in Miami-Dade and Broward and Palm Beach County in South Florida. So I think it's too early. You know, they opened up the boat ramps, for example, and I saw lines of people and boats with 5, 6, 7 people on them. And these people, if they want to get sick, that's fine. But that's not about – it's about more than that right now. Because if they get sick and they go home to their elderly or, you know, at-risk parents or friends or family members or what have you, then – that's not a good situation. So maybe in parts of the country where it's not, as widespread as it is in the big metro areas, perhaps, you know, maybe a phasing like they've been talking about, but it's too early for here and other places like this.
All right. What about Darius? What are your thoughts on the lockdown? Well, unrestricting the lockdown.
I agree with Don and Ron to an extent, but I believe that it should have happened a long time ago, the restrictions. And the reason I say that is not because I think everybody should run out and go back to business as usual, but I think each individual should be allowed to make decisions that's best for him or her, because every situation has different factors. Depending on where you live, you may live in a rural area. You may live somewhere where there aren't many infections, people who have contracted the virus. You may be young and healthy. You may be old and sickly. You may be in a situation where, most guys on the panel are economically secure. They're okay. If your baby is crying and they need milk, or they need Pampers, you don't have any money coming in, you're going to have to get out there and take that chance. Do I go to work and risk contracting the virus, or do I let my baby starve to death? And it's really those types of choices for some people. So I think the government has overreached in this situation. I think they have taken that choice and that right from Americans. And I think that Americans overall are smart enough to make decisions for themselves that best work for their lives individually. And so, yeah, I think all the restrictions should be taken off and allow Americans to make decisions for themselves. Of course, you have some places like New York where, you know, the situations are a lot different there than they are, say, here in Georgia. Or Florida, or South Dakota. But, you know, you have governors that are getting power drunk right now, like Gavin Newsom in California and like the governor in Michigan, where they're going beyond, you know, what's necessary or that makes any sense in order to flex their muscle. And they're enjoying this power right now.
Okay. Hey, Darius, if I can say something, David. I'm not disagreeing with anything, basically, but in California, the governor Newsom did open up the beach that you're referring to, and it was swarmed with people, and then he had to close it again. Because what's the point of, you know, people being, you know, not socially distant and getting each other sick and then spreading the virus even more?
Right, but I understand statistically they say in California there's only about 4 deaths per 100,000 people in California, and also that the virus does not do very well in heat and sunlight. So to me, what better place to be than outside in 85-degree weather on the beach? You know, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm just saying.
All right. Well, we have actually Michael. He's out there. Michael, give us your thoughts on what's going on there and lifting the restrictions and how's California doing with the beaches open and stuff.
Hey, how you guys doing? Actually, I literally just left the beach. I'm riding up out here in California. It's called Pacific Coast Highway, where all the beaches connect. It's like a highway. You can ride up and down and look at the ocean. And Governor Gavin Newsom did the right thing by shutting these beaches down because, I mean, the people, I disagree with one of the callers that said the American people know how to act. No, the American people do not know how to act. They don't. They do not know how to make up their own good decisions because they were all out at the beach. They weren't social distancing. So I'm actually happy that Governor Newsom shut the beaches down here in California. Because, yeah, you're right. We do have the smallest case, only 400,000 people, and I would like to keep it that way. And open it up is not going to help the problem. It's going to just add to the problem.
All right. Okay, Spencer, what are your thoughts on opening? I know that you have one of those jobs that are very difficult to get not go to. So what are your thoughts on lifting the restrictions on this lockdown?
It's a good thing, but I think it's like 50-50. I don't think everything should have been lifted. Like let's say in California, the beaches, restrictions should have been lifted, or, you know, jobs so people, you know, regular jobs so people could get back to work. And it seems like more restrictions have also lifted, things that are more fun. Like I know in Florida, like the boating, it was a long line there. And like you said, California, the beaches, I don't think that's more towards fun instead of like work. That's what I'm saying. So I think some of the restrictions should have been lifted just more towards people getting back to work and to be making more money instead of, you know, just having fun. And just getting out the house, I guess that's what I'm saying.
You know, and I was a little confused in Georgia, the restrictions were lifted for massage parlors. It was for bowling alleys, for barbers and beauty shops, for those things that where people are right on top of you, they lifted the restrictions. I was a little confused. I don't know why they would do that. And, you know, I guess it depends on the governor and the cabinets of what they're doing. But don't you think this is all very strange, Ron, the way the governors are doing it and the governors are fighting with the president? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, and it's funny that you asked me that because I was just thinking as you were saying that, unfortunately, in this country, it has become partisan. When you hear that the Senate is going back to work and the House is not, okay, and when you see the rallies of the people protesting to open up and free our states, and, you know, it's along party lines. I mean, there's no other way to put it. It's basically along party lines. Unfortunately, I don't know exactly how we got to this place. I have a theory, but I'm not going to touch on that because I don't want to start World War III. But, you know, I think it stems from poor leadership. And this country right now, you know, the way that we've reacted, okay, to this virus, because we, again, and, you know, I'll say this again, I don't think we were as prepared as the president is telling us we were. And I don't think we've done as great of a job. Yes, I know that, you know, it's very difficult to deal with a crisis like this. And you know, you kind of make things up sometimes as you go. But I don't think anybody can argue with the fact that we weren't as prepared as maybe we could have been. Now, having said that, you know, the fact that it's all patchwork. You know, in Florida, for example, the mayor of the city of Miami wanted to shut down the airport to international flights, the mayor of the city of Miami, and then the mayor of the county stepped in and he said, and wrote the president and said, that's not up to the mayor of the city of Miami. It's a county airport, so it's up to me. And then, you know, and there's bickering back and forth between the states and even among the states, you know, the governors with the cities. I mean, it's and everything is done patchwork, and it's basically a mess. I mean, how could you open up a beach in Fort Lauderdale, right? And just down the road in Hollywood, the beaches are closed. It makes zero sense.
What do you think about that, Bruce?
I'm still getting my sea legs on. Sorry I'm late, gentlemen. Couldn't agree with Ron more that it is lack of leadership. Oh, wait, who's supposed to be leading? Yes, the president, and yes, the Senate, and yes, the House, and a whole lot of people. I agree, and you heard me say that, Ron, that the president can be his own worst enemy, a little bombastic, a little this, a little that. But I will also stand on the fact that I think his heart's in the right place. I think he has done a lot more for a lot of people, and he gets no credit. The only credit he gets is bad credit. They beat him up mercilessly every single day. There's nothing this man that he can do is right. You know, I know, Don knows, and everybody else that breathes that's listening to this program know that that's not true. He's done a lot of good. He is not perfect, just like anybody else is not perfect. But I want to, if you want to give beg me a little more time here, remember I've told you I've done research on other channels with other organizations. I don't just listen to one side. I try to listen to all the sides. And this is close to home for you, David. You ever heard of Democratic Representative Vernon Jones?
What was the name?
Vernon Jones.
No. Yeah, he represents. This is. I'm sorry. This is Darius, but I know he represents the Cab County here in Georgia.
Yeah.
Where he's. Yeah. He's
yeah,
the CEO.
Yeah. And what he has said recently is kind of put his thumb on the pulse of things in regards to a little bit of what Trump is trying to do. That is, I think, is a positive. Vernon is about 50, almost 60 years old. He's been representative a couple of times, and he's about ready to not leave the party. He's a Democrat, but he's about ready to leave the issue. He says that he supports Trump, and he is a Democrat, has been all his life, and people, of course, are ostracizing him because he even mentions that he wants to do that. His basis for that is Trump has reduced black unemployment significantly, criminal justice reform significantly for minorities, protect the nation against illegal immigration, and support black colleges. And he said, my party, meaning Mr. Jones's party, Democrat, have left me. I haven't left them. And he said, until they understand where the role they're supposed to play and be part of the team. He said, I don't want anything to do with my party anymore. Not at all. So I found that very interesting. And he's right. He said Trump, in his own way, with his sometimes not the best delivery, has trying to do the right thing and has performed well in many ways. And he does not get any credit at all. None.
Okay, can I add to that? I mean,
sure.
I'm a Democrat. I voted for Barack Obama, but I must agree, and I know this will probably amaze you guys. I kind of agree with him on that. The fact that Donald Trump has done more for the black community than Barack Obama has done. I must admit that. And mind you, I'm speaking as a very strong Barack Obama supporter. I love him to death, but he didn't do a lot for the black community. He didn't do a lot for his base, which was African Americans. Donald Trump has really done a lot for African Americans. I here in California personally know 5 or 6 friends of mine who got released from prison early because of the First Step Act that Donald Trump signed into the law. So you got to give credit where it's due. I don't like Donald Trump at all. I'll never vote for him, but I got to give credit where it's due. He has done a lot for the black community.
And before we get off that subject, sorry for the large soapbox, guys. Michael, you're right. You don't have to vote for him. You don't have to agree on everything he does. But I agree with you on that. I tend to be more independent than anything else. But I have a question for you, Michael, and any else that want to jump in, is why is there such blind allegiance of many of the African-American and let's say other minorities, but African-American, black minorities is what's focused on the most over the decades? Why is there such blind allegiance to voting Democrat? Mr. Vernon's comment was, and this is pretty strong, I even thought, he says the Democratic Party is acting like the plantation owner and the plantation workers are the blacks. And I said, whoa, that's pretty strong. And oh, by the way, he's an African American gentleman. You guys know that.
Right. Let me answer that. Hang on, let me answer that. I have a two-fold question to answer for that.
Yeah, let Michael answer first, and then you, Don.
Yeah,
so
please.
One reason why African Americans are so beholden to the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party, is because at least the Democratic Party tries to do outreach in the black community. The Republican Party doesn't even try to do any outreach in the black community. I mean, the Democrats did at least allow a black man to be the head of their ticket, Barack Obama. The Republican Party fired Michael Steele, who was the head of the RNC, after he did a great job because they just couldn't tolerate having a black guy leading their party. And just realistically, I mean, there are a lot of racists in the Republican Party. Now, there's racists in both parties, I do agree. But the Republicans embrace the racist element. The Democrats don't embrace that racist element. So that's the reason why we're beholden and we're so falling in line behind the Democratic Party. But I do agree with you, we shouldn't. But we only have two choices. It's like we either go with David Duke or we go with Strom Thurmond. Who are we going to go with here?
Yeah, no, yeah, you make a good
hold
point.
Up, Bruce. Hey, Bruce,
okay,
you can't do that first. Bruce, you asked the question,
Don,
Bruce.
Don,
now, let
hold on a second. Then I do want to hear.
You're the only man I know will ask a question and answer it, too.
Your opinion. I just want to address what Michael said. Michael, I agree with you. The Republican Party, for the most part, overall, hasn't been as strong. But as you just said, the Republican Party right now under Trump has changed quite a bit in a positive regard. That's all I wanted to add.
Now, Bruce, will you listen?
Yes.
Okay, listen. You asked the question, over the past 10 years, why has the Democratic Party been so aligned with black people? Did you ask that question?
Did you ask that question?
I went even further. Decades, yeah.
Decade, the last decade, 10 years.
No, decades.
Well, over the past decade, I'll take one.
Okay.
We finally got a president that just happens to be of color. Notice how I said a president that just happens to be of color in the history of America. This president had to face unbelievable circumstances that our country was going through and overcame them all and kept the unity and tried to build it with pride, hope, integrity. And then we get this 45 guy come in. He says, I'm going to tear down everything that this man has ever done. Everything that he stood for, I'm going to destroy it. But you know what? There was a man that got up out of his deathbed and went down to the Senate floor and put a thumbs down to save me from not having health care. And now the major issue in the world today is health care. And then here's a man that just pride himself on taking care of his people, gave them a tax abatement last year to take care of his buddies. I don't see anyone around him in his inner circle that even looks like me but Ben Carson. And then I question that sometimes. Let me tell you why. I think I've stated my case, Bruce. And if you look at what I just said, you can understand why I feel like I feel. Because, see, I'm not Democrat or Republican. I'm independent. But when I've seen this the past 10 years of what this man has done to destroy the credibility of President Barack Obama, I don't like it.
All right, gentlemen. Let's get with Darius. I know you're burning up to say something. Go ahead.
Go, Darius.
Hey. Yeah, I want to say there's only one reason why black people switched to Democrat support, and that was FDR and the New Deal. And, you know, the Democrats have done an awesome job of switching the race card onto Republicans. There is no proof, there's no evidence, there's nothing to support the claim that Republicans are racist. Now, if you think back to the civil rights movement in the 60s, in the 50s, the people who were turning loose fire hoses on black people, yeah, those were Democrats. The people who were sicking police dogs on black people, those were Democrats. The people who were standing in the entryways of public schools saying, nobody will pass through, no black person will pass through here as long as I'm alive, those were Democrats. Please understand me, the Ku Klux Klan, those were radical Democrats. So when we talk about Dayton and Strom Thurmond, who was a Democrat then too, you talk about those people. You don't mention Robert Byrd, who was a grand cyclops of KKK, who was the leader of the Democratic Party, who Barack Obama eulogized, who Bill Clinton said he was right then and right now. You don't hear about those type of Democrats. You don't hear about the governor, the guy who just wore blackface or whatever. You don't hear about any of that from Donald Trump or anybody in the Republican Party. Those are all Democrats. What about Joe Biden, who said, oh, Barack Obama was the first articulate and clean black man. Joe Biden, who said that you have to have an Indian accent to go into a Dunkin' Donuts. You see, Republicans haven't made these kinds of statements, but you guys overlook that because if you have a D in front of your name, you can get away with that. And the reason why black people have stuck to the Democratic Party, and it's insulting why, it's because the Democratic Party is famous for giveaways. And they made black people feel like in order for you to get ahead, you need us. You're not going to make it if you don't have welfare. You're not going to make it if you don't have food stamps. You're not going to succeed if you don't have government set aside, if you don't have Section 8 housing. And so black people fell into that like, oh, yeah, this is what we need to do. This is what's owed to us. But see, what happened is black people thought that it was owed to us that we were gaining something, but what it did was it enslaved black people and it held black people back because it took away our innovation, it took away our ingenuity, it took away black people's desire to want to build. And they became dependent on the government, which was the Democratic Party. Sorry to be
okay,
such
let
a
me
long statement,
let me interject,
but that's
that.
The long and short of it.
Yeah, I disagree with the statement. I agree with a lot of what you said, but I disagree with it was welfare that took away the incentives for black people to get up and work. I would say it was the lynchings and the hangings and the beatings and the rapes that took away the incentive for black people to get up and go work. And when you say that the Democratic Party is a party of giveaways, well, the Republican Party is a party of takeaways. The Republican Party has taken so much from the black community over decades in history that, yeah, some of us African-Americans do feel like there's a debt that's owed to us. I'm one of them. I feel like there's a debt owed to the African-American community for 200 years of slavery, for 100 years of Jim Crow. So every time I hear people say, well, the black community feels like there's something owed to them, there is absolutely positively something owed to us.
Michael, I agree. There is something owed to us, but I don't think that you are owed a welfare check. I don't think you're owed Section 8 housing. I don't think you're owed food stamps. You got to understand what that did. When you're talking about lynchings and stuff that happened, black people were on the move up before FDR. So after the lynchings and all that, they were on the move on the way up. They had their businesses. They had their founded their universities and everything. What happened is, welfare, Section 8, all this under FDR created a cradle for black people. It took the black man out of the home because if you were on Section 8 housing and receiving a check, you couldn't have a man stay in your house.
Man in the home. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one.
Okay. So what happened was black people became dependent, and that created the ghettos and the slums, and that created a lack of desire for education, a lack of desire to go out and create a business, a lack of desire to go out and network and build, because you knew that no matter what, you were going to get a check at the first of every month, you're going to get food at the first of every month, you're going to get health care in the form of Medicaid. All these things is what Democrats brought to black people, and black people bought into it. And that's why.
Yeah, but if you got a starving family and they're hungry, and you say, "Hey, I'm going to give you food once a month," I mean, who's going to pass that up when they're starving? Come on now. But we don't have to go as far back as FDR. Hang on, we don't have to go back as far back as FDR. Black people were on the come up and on the rise before Ronald Reagan got into office. You don't have to go as far back as FDR. Ronald Reagan stopped in the 70s. The black community was doing really good. We were on the come up. And then Ronald Reagan got in there and shut that all down. So you don't have to go far back to FDR. You can go back to the 80s.
And then I think a lot of things are not being brought up. There are more white people on food stamps and Section 8 and all the set-asides than black people. Come
Absolutely.
On, let's get for real about that. And the thing is,
yeah, but not per capita,
Oh, yeah. I mean, you talk about per capita or percentage,
yeah.
It doesn't make any difference. More white people are on welfare than black people. And the thing is, we had to because we had nothing. Listen, I came from Michigan. I came from the General Motors, Ford, Chrysler era where the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was the middle class. The second richest time in America per capita of people in history. A person can go to the plant, General Motors, Ford, Chrysler, without a high school education and make $50,000 a year. Him, his wife, have a nice home, two cars in the driveway, two cars. It's being eliminated. They're getting away from the middle class.
All right, gentlemen. I'm going to bring that one to a little end. Not end, but we can continue on. But there are some other things I wanted to throw in. And one of them is I want you to think about this comment that was made this morning from Larry Kudlow, who's the White House National Economic Council director, who said, the U.S. is probably going to rebound from the coronavirus with historic growth rate in 2021. What he said, the population will increase over 25-30% in 2021, which means that what all you guys are talking about is, I mean, it's going to be very difficult for our economy, because right now it's difficult. Right now, people who are on trying to get money for unemployment can't even get through the lines. Just think about 2021. What are your thoughts on that? You know what? One of the things I want to do is go back to what you were just talking about, and what we haven't heard was, how does someone who is, you know, just getting out of their 20s or in their 20s think about what you just said? So, Spencer, the conversation that they were just having about welfare and food stamps and all that, how do you think about that? And then how would you put that in perspective for this being even more dramatic in 2021 when we're expecting a growth? What are your thoughts?
I don't think it's a forever thing. As far as like, I don't, if I was on welfare, I couldn't see myself always on welfare. It would have to be a way out. And I think it would be like a time being thing. And I want to say that's what the intentions were. And then some people just got dependent on it.
Awesome.
You know? But I think I'm hoping the intentions were just so it could be like a temporary thing. We help you out if you're struggling, you're unemployed or something like that, then we have this for you. But I would think one is their intention is to get out of that and to get self-sufficient and on their own. That's just my personal opinion as far as the welfare thing is. Because some people, I think, stay on it too long and just get dependent on it instead of actually taking an initiative to help themselves, to better themselves, and just use it as a crutch, you know, as a crutch to say, oh, because of this, because of that, instead of actually taking the initiative to better themselves, to get off of welfare. Now, your second question was asking, what do I think of the guy? I guess he was saying that economy is going to get better because of, you know, the population increase.
Not better, worse.
I think so. Oh, it's going to get worse.
Well, because you have, you know, if you have 25% more children, babies, and, you know, our economy will take either a dive or a jump, one or the other. How do you feel?
I think it's a 50-50 split. I guess if this virus continues to haunt us the way that it did, or if it gets significantly worse, then people will save more like they've been doing, save more and not going out more, so you're not spending as much. The only companies that would probably be making the money would be like the grocery store and, you know, companies like Amazon and things like that. But and also the baby factor, because that also takes away from the spending, because now instead of focusing on fun, you got to focus on your child.
All right.
Hey, David.
Yes.
The social unemployment is at an all-time high, David, and we're going through a crisis right now with this coronavirus. And unemployment being at an all-time high, it's going to be some years before we get back to not depending upon the social programs. I mean, the stimulus check of $1,200 is a drop in the bucket. It's a token. I mean, we're seeing long lines of people looking for food right now. Long lines of people looking for food. People that never thought they'd be in a car, him and his wife looking for food to feed their kids. And there's going to be some businesses that are not going to come back. So the social programs are going to increase.
All right. Can I jump in just for a little bit?
Sure.
I agree with what Spencer said. I think he touched on, so did Darius and so did Don. on the aspect of, I think all of us really want to advance based on independency, so we're not dependent on the government, so we have a job, so that this delicate dance that we were doing for so long and got very good at it until the dance floor dropped out of things a couple of months ago, everything is independent. As Don said, it's all interconnected. But the self-worth and getting back to something anywhere close to what we had is not going to be done by government paying us or us sitting at home. We have to find a way, I don't have the answer, to get back on our feet and get as many people employed as possible. That is the support of independence, not the support of dependence. And we'll never get there by being dependent on the government. We have to be dependent on ourselves, and we have to have the opportunities to do that. And until that happens, we're not going to have a substantial recovery.
All right. Question. Do any of you know about any science to help with this coronavirus that's going on right now? Are you aware that there is any cures or help in science for us going on? Are you aware, yeah. Ron?
Of what? A cure?
Not cure, but anything to help. My whole point here is: are we aware that there's any science being established to help this virus, to help us overcome
it? I'm actually just seeing it right now on the news as we're speaking, that there's eight pretty significant and promising trials all around the world. Two of them are right here in the United States that look very promising. And I just heard also that they're going to start doing some testing in June, I believe they said. Now, I've also heard that you can't speed up the process because you're going to miss markers that are critical along the way. Dr. Fauci's original, a year to 18 months, I think that still stands. Pushing for a vaccine by the end of the year might be stretching a little bit, but, once we get to February, March, we're reaching the year mark. So, Hopefully something is in the works that will, that will take care of this virus. And then, of course, I heard another doctor this morning say that there's going to be strains, that this is going to be an ongoing thing, because there's going to be different strains of coronavirus that they're going to have to be developing vaccines for.
Hey, Ron?
Uh-huh.
Ron, this is Bruce.
Bruce.
Even if I agree with you, even if I think there's a lot they're trying to come up with, even if we had a cure right now, a vaccine to fix it, do you still think it would be a long or short recovery?
For the economy for health?
For the economy, yes, for the economy.
I think it's going to be a gradual recovery. I don't think it's going to be, within a matter of a few weeks. The reason I say that is we've taken such a hard hit in this country, and there's so many millions that are unemployed, and there's sectors of the economy that are going to bounce back a lot faster than others. For example, the hospitality industry down here in South Florida, we rely so heavily on tourism, that is devastated. That means all the hotels on Miami Beach and all along the ocean, all along the coast in Florida, and the restaurants, when people travel from abroad, which, by the way, they're not going to be doing for months, okay? So that's why I say there's going to be sectors that bounce back quicker than others. But overall, the economy, I think, is going to be a very slow and gradual comeback, is my opinion.
Ron, I couldn't agree with you more, because perception, reality, too, and that's what you just touched on, that even if we had an absolute cure right now, it's going to take quite a while for us to get feel confident that we can go into a restaurant or fly in a plane and a number of things as a whole society. And it is going to take quite a while. I agree with you.
Hey, Bruce.
I kind of respectfully disagree with that. I think the minute they say we have a vaccine, I think everybody is so eager to get back on the airplane, so eager to get back out there, that it's going to take off like a rocket. I don't think it's going to be gradual. I think it's going to be literally overnight. The economy is going to bounce right back.
Well, I hope you're right.
Hey, Bruce. I don't think so. And my brother out in California, I don't think so because we've had a situation in America where it's already been proven. They said the water was not able to be drunk out of the faucet in Flint, Michigan. They said they fixed the pipes, but people still aren't drinking the water.
That's right.
Yeah, but you talking about black people. That's black people.
We're talking about people.
No, Don's right. Don's right. It's all the people in the Flint area. Absolutely.
But it's predominantly a black community, though.
Well,
if it was Beverly Hills, they would have had that fixed a long time ago.
But the point isn't the point, Don, you're trying to make is it's perception. The perception is
exactly.
It really good water? People are going to slow walk that.
We don't know.
They're going to wait in the shallow end before they go swimming again.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And
you know what? It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while for the confidence to build back in the economy as well.
Exactly.
I hope the recovery
is fast. Fast enough. Slowness of it isn't so bad.
Well,
Bruce, what do you think about the armed men?
The armed men standing
out there in Michigan with those guns on. What did you think about that?
They didn't need to do that. They wanted to be a little titillating and confrontational. They would have made a much better statement by not walking around with their guns. I agree with that.
Wow, quiet moment. I can't believe it.
They didn't need the gun.
All right. Maybe I can tell you why I asked that question. I asked that question because there are a couple of things going on right now that we don't know that's actually happening. Because just recently, the FDA approved a coronavirus antibody test that they said is almost perfect. It can instantly tell you if you have it and not, and which level you have it at. But there's also pharmaceutical firm, Gilead's antiviral drug. They've created a drug called Remdesivir that has success that they've been using to help patients recover really fast. But, you know, we have complained on this panel so much about the press not telling the people the stories, the good, positive stuff. And I think this is a prime example of, here we have something that's actually working, but we don't know anything about it, but it's kind of hidden deep down in the press.
I've heard about that too, David. I actually bought stock in the company Gilead Science because I heard they were getting ready to come up with a cure. I think the media does let us know that too.
Yeah, it's a little bit, but
Remdesivir has been talked about for weeks.
But the press, it's almost like an afterthought.
They give you the good news in the last 2 minutes of a broadcast. As an afterthought. I agree with
Bruce,
David. Yes.
Bruce, I have to respectfully disagree with that because all the news that I've been watching, and it's the quote-unquote fake news, ABC, CBS, NBC, the first thing that they're leading recently is, you know, the race for a vaccine and Remdesivir or possible, you know, a cure, and et cetera, et cetera. So I have to disagree with you. And something you said earlier, too, about the I think you were implying that it was the media, but how Trump is always, being attacked and nothing positive is being brought forth to the American people. Well, guess what? I've seen, again, the quote-unquote fake news come down and you know, really focus on the accusations against Joe Biden now. And he's a Democrat. So I think, I personally think that the news is as impartial as they can be.
Well, those 2 points, I agree with you. Those two specific points, I agree with you.
All right, gentlemen, let's. I'm going to bring that to a close because I want to talk about something that I think I just want to put on everybody's minds, because right now the vice presidential committees are trying to come up with who would be a good VP candidate for Biden if he takes the lead on this election thing. And there are several names, you know, Elizabeth Warren, and of course, Michelle Obama, and now I heard that Hillary Clinton might be. So if Biden takes the female VP, who do you think would be the best of all the names that have come up, the top three people that have come up? What do you think, Darius? Because we don't think that way. But let me ask you.
Well, the question is Joe Biden even going to be the nominee? That's the question. I don't know.
Well,
if he
is the nominee and they want to put a star with him, who should they put with him? Who do you think
the best person he could pick would, by far, most popular would be Michelle Obama. I'm not speaking from a policy standpoint or a qualification standpoint. I'm speaking purely from popularity. Hillary Clinton is a sour taste for a lot of people. Nobody wants to see her again. She's not very likable. Elizabeth Warren couldn't even win her own state in the primary, so I don't know what good that would do him getting her. So, and then people have to know that with Joe Biden's health and his mental capacity, that they would be essentially electing a president, not a vice president.
You left it over there.
I think personally, and I'm speaking as a staunch liberal. Sometimes being a Democrat does stand for dumb, and I think they're going to be dumb about picking their vice president, which is going to cost them the election. I personally think they should pick Elizabeth Warren, because Elizabeth Warren is the most qualified, and she'll mop the floor in a debate with Wade Pence. But I think he's going to pick Stacey Abrams, and I think the Stacey Abrams pick is going to cost him the election, because nobody wants to see Stacey Abrams as the president nor the vice president.
What are your thoughts on that, Spencer?
Wow. Well, I said here, and I heard a couple weeks ago that Stacey Abrams will be a good pick. So, and I was thinking, like, that might be interesting for Stacey Abrams to be VP. So I agree with Michael in California. I think that he's going to pick Stacey Abrams.
You know, they're also thinking about Hillary Clinton with the vice president of Barack Obama. That has hit the news recently also. But, John, which female do you think would be the best one if Biden gets the nomination? Who do you think he should team up with if it has to be a female, if it is going to be a female?
Yeah, David, you chose a great topic, and I think that topic is a great topic because within the next week or two, we're going to see the answer. And I'm glad to hear you take the poll of everybody. But Clyburn really took the pressure off Joe when he said it doesn't have to be a woman of color, but it needs to be a woman. I agree. It needs to be a woman. But Clyburn took the pressure off of it. But the thing is, I think Joe will look at the tremendous candidates that he has, Stacey Abrams, Kamala Harris, Amy, Elizabeth. I don't think Michelle Obama will even entertain the thought of even running as a vice president. But based upon the choices that he has and the tremendous field of choices, I think that he will choose Elizabeth Warren as his vice president. And then when he wins the election, he's going to have Kamala Harris as his attorney general, so he'll have a full cabinet.
Wow.
I just don't understand what Elizabeth Warren.
So what do you think, Bruce?
You can't bring any votes.
Yeah,
you can't bring any votes to him.
I agree. Elizabeth Warren will be one of the worst choices he could make. And
no way, that'd be the best choice he could make. That'd be his best choice if he picked Elizabeth Warren.
My biggest fear with Joe Biden is, and the more and more you hear things in the background, is let's get Joe elected and then we'll decide who's going to run the country because it won't be Joe. And that's my biggest fear, is he'll just be a figurehead. And if that's really true, not that that hasn't happened before, I'm sure it has. But he doesn't even exude the confidence that he could run it. Most of them that are run by behind-the-scenes people at least can exude the confidence that they should be there. Joe can't do that.
All right, gentlemen, we only have a few minutes left in the show. We always bring Spencer on to talk about sports, and we have Spencer here, and we haven't heard a lot about sports recently. So, Spencer, what's going on in the sports world right now with this coronavirus and everything going on? What's going on in the sports world that we need to know about?
Well, there's not really much going on, but a couple of the headlines that I've seen is they're going to start back racing soon, but just without fans. I know they're doing this iRacing thing right now, and actually one of the big stars of the Chase Elliott, he actually got fired from NASCAR from saying the N-word to his father, who was actually white. So that was another, because he was supposed to be the big free agent, and he got fired from NASCAR. Sponsors dropped, I think, besides one, for saying the N-word, you know, live while they're doing the e-racing. So, they often do the NASCAR without the fan. I saw something also about that with baseball, that when they bring baseball back, it'll be a fanless game.
They're about to run 7 races in 11 days. I don't know how they do that, but 7 real races in 11 days, I think it's going to be, all around the Charlotte area. And what you said is true. Using the N-word to describe anybody is a third rail, and not only is it electrocution, it's totally disrespectful and wrong, period.
All right, so one last question. We got 2 minutes left. And do you feel that people who are not social distancing should get tickets? Because a lot of the states are doing it. Some are doing more than just tickets. You get 2 tickets or 3 tickets, you go to jail. So if you're not 6 feet from people, do you think American citizens should actually, and based on what Darius said, it should be up to the person, you know, what they're thinking, but there are some police officers out there tasing people and everything about this social distancing. So do you think that America has gone a little bit overboard, or do you think people really should get tickets for not social distancing? What do you think, Doc? Wait a minute.
You know something, David? Hey, David, you know, if a person is out there and they see people not socially distancing themselves, for one, I know how to remove myself.
Yeah, that's true.
I know how to protect Don.
Yeah.
I know
how
to get away from them. Police don't have to arrest them. I can get away from them. So, come on, let's use common sense. We don't need to be out there right now. It's too early.
Hey, Don, remember the phrase, you can't fix stupid. You're right.
You're right, Bruce.
You can't fix stupid.
Wow.
But you can't police that. It's crazy. You can't do it.
They're trying to.
I know they're trying to.
They're doing it.
Yes. Half the youth, a lot of the youth up here don't wear masks, don't wear gloves, and all our stores now are mandatory. You wear a mask when you walk in the store. They're not doing it.
Wait a minute. Oklahoma City
guys,
is the mask rule.
Can we think about something just for a second as Americans? This is Darius.
Yeah.
You understand that we're discussing people getting citations and getting arrested for something that is not a law.
Right.
I don't think anybody should ever get arrested for anything that the legislation has not approved as a law. So this is crazy that we're even having a discussion in America.
Amen.
I agree. I agree.
All right. I agree, Darius.
Once again, a great show. Thank you guys for being here. We'll be back again next week, same time, with all this great dialogue coming from the panel here. You guys have a safe week. Wear your mask. Wash your hands.
I won't be here next week.
Be safe.
And
Joe Biden
will pick the next vice president of the United States of America.
My gosh. Don, we need to talk. So
hey, enjoy always. Be blessed.
Have a good week, guys.
I love you guys.